20 minutes, so if board members could take their seats, we'll resume our meeting. We are going to go right to agenda item 9. Stormwater post-construction requirements status report. And
they're outside.
Yeah.
Just around the corner.
Where?
Right there.
Oh. Okay, they're coming in. Who's been sitting over there?
This is Bruce's seat.
Ah, okay. Why don't you just kind of condense it?
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't want to sit next to you?
She was making that up. I
said Bruce.
Oh, okay. All right. Is this working, you guys? Doesn't look like it. Michael.
So you've got to go ahead and reduce it.
Okay.
John, we have a problem with the timer.
It's kind of on a short leash.
Stretch. Why don't we begin?
Item 9. Yeah. On February 5th, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted a new Phase 2 municipal stormwater permit that will require the Central Coast Board to take specific action to implement the post-construction requirements under the new statewide general permit. This item is a status report describing actions the board must take and staff's plan for implementing the post-construction stormwater runoff requirements. Phil Hammer will make the presentation.
Good morning, board members. My name is Phil Hammer. I'm a senior environmental scientist. I supervise the stormwater unit here at the water board.
Can you speak up a little louder, Phil?
Is this on?
Yeah,
it is. It's just maybe
yeah.
Too tall. If it doesn't work, I can move down there. So let me know if it's not loud enough. So today I'm going to be discussing the post-construction requirements, which are requirements that municipalities apply to development projects to control stormwater runoff. As a quick reminder, this board adopted the post-construction requirements in September of 2012. And the last time we discussed the post-construction requirements was in February of 2013, when I provided to you a status report on our implementation. And during that update, I focused mainly on staff's current efforts to implement the post-construction requirements. I didn't go into our future plans. And that's mainly because the State Water Board was going to be adopting the new Phase 2 stormwater permit just a few days after that update. And so at that time, it was uncertain how the new State Board permit and our post-construction requirements would interact and how the new permit would address our post-construction requirements. So now that permit has been adopted. It was adopted in February, and our path forward is more clear. And so today I'll explain to you staff's plan for moving forward with post-construction implementation under the new permit. First off, the new permit clearly endorses our post-construction requirements. It cites watershed process-based requirements in the process that we use to develop our requirements, and it also provides regional boards the opportunity to develop and implement their own watershed process-based post-construction requirements. Which is something that we've already done. However, the state board finds that our resolution that adopted the post-construction requirements is invalid under the new permit, but we see this as a relatively straightforward administrative task to correct. The reason that they find our post-construction requirements invalid under the new permit is because our resolution that implements the post-construction requirements did that through stormwater management plans. And under the new permit, those stormwater management plans no longer exist. So we'll need to modify our resolution to address that issue and readopt the post-construction requirements so they can be implemented under the new permit. But again, we see that as a pretty straightforward administrative task. So in response to the new permit requirement for readoption, staff plans to bring the post-construction requirements back to this board for consideration of readoption this July. And readoption in July will allow for post-construction requirements implementation to stay on its current schedule. The post-construction requirements are currently scheduled for implementation to begin in September. And in addition to this administrative task of readopting the post-construction requirements, we also, in July, want to take the opportunity to address what we're calling the 1.963 multiplier issue. This is a technical issue that has to do with how you calculate the amount of runoff that needs to be retained on site at a development project. And since the adoption of the post-construction requirements, we've gotten many comments on this issue, and we've been working diligently to address that, and we're making good progress on that. And we expect to have it resolved by July. So in addition to that one technical issue, we also acknowledge that stakeholders have raised other technical issues with the post-construction requirements. And we know that with a lengthy and complex set of requirements, like the post-construction requirements, there's always going to be room for improvement. But at the time that you adopted the post-construction requirements in September of 2012, you set up a process for us to assess the implementation, take a look at the requirements on a regular basis, and make any modifications that may be necessary. And we've actively been doing that. The multiplier issue is an example of how that process is working well. And we plan to continue that process with the other technical issues that have been raised. Following readoption of the post-construction requirements and addressing that first technical issue of the multiplier. And we also plan to regularly report to you on our progress on that front. And I'd like to address one other issue that's likely to come up today, and that's the issue of time extensions. Yesterday we received a letter from Santa Cruz County Municipalities basically requesting a time extension for when implementation would begin. Implementation is currently scheduled for beginning this September. And we've been receiving a lot of these types of comments, as you know, for quite some time now, over a year. And in response to those requests, you've previously provided at least two time extensions already. One time extension to comment on the post-construction requirements, and then another 6 months following adoption of the post-construction requirements to allow for implementation. And so the latest requests for more time revolve around issues such as CEQA and California Coastal Commission approval processes. And we've reviewed those issues and find that an additional time is not warranted because of those for those reasons. And for example, California Coastal Commission staff is here today, and they'll be able to explain to you why their approval processes don't necessarily cause delay for implementation of our post-construction requirements. But in any event, we expect this is going to be an ongoing issue that's going to evolve between now and July when we bring an action item to you. At that time, you'll have the opportunity to make a decision on a time extension. And we plan to go through a rigorous public comment and response process, and we'll have a recommendation for you at that time in July. And finally, I'd like to emphasize that the post-construction requirements are the right requirements at this time. The post-construction requirements remain well-founded and are supported by the State Water Resources Control Board. They've been established over a lengthy process involving years of development and stakeholder involvement. And a team of technical experts developed the approach, and staff has fully vetted the requirements. And arguments being made now about the post-construction requirements are not new. They've been made before and addressed at that time. That being said, we're committed to learning as we implement the post-construction requirements. As I mentioned earlier, you set up a process for us to do that when you adopted the post-construction requirements, and we will continue to assess issues as they come up to determine if we should pursue any kind of corrective action. And we'll also regularly report to you and the State Board on our progress. So in summary, staff proposes to bring the post-construction requirements to you for readoption in July and continue with the current schedule for implementation in September, and then rely upon the review process you've set up and that is already underway to address any further technical issues that may arise. That concludes my presentation. I'm available for questions now or later.
Okay. Any board questions of Mr. Hammer? Mr. Johnston?
I have a few questions. Mr. Hammer, first of all, can you just briefly summarize for me what the other technical issues are that are being worked on in the JRT besides the 1.963 multiplier?
We're currently focused on the multiplier. The other issues we're not working on yet. What we're trying to do is resolve the multiplier issue and then move on to the other issues. Some issues that have been raised is like how to determine technical infeasibility on a project site. Basically, we say if, you know, to some extent, the requirements say if it's technically infeasible to implement these requirements, you don't need to implement them. But then the question is, well, what is technical infeasibility? And so working on that issue to put some more more detail on what that might be is one issue. Another issue I've been talking with a stakeholder on recently is application of some of the requirements in ministerial permits. Some of the requirements are somewhat discretionary in the way they're termed, and we need to convert those into very straightforward requirements for a ministerial permit, so that's some work that may happen. So there's a few different technical issues, and I'm not sure we've identified all of them, but really the plan is to get the post-construction requirements readopted and address the multiplier issue in July, then develop basically a list of these other technical issues, prioritize them, and start working through, you know, the assessment of those.
And then those would be later revisions to the permit?
Potentially, or not. Potentially, I mean, it would be to assess them.
Now, the second question I have is, I note in the letter from the Santa Cruz and Monterey County cities that they appear to be making a point that the that our resolution, R3-2012-0025, is not in effect. Is there a difference between us and them on that?
There is. The new permit does not go into effect until July 1st, and the old permit is in effect until that time. And the old permit, we implemented the post-construction requirements through that old permit. The new permit also says municipalities need to continue implementation of their existing programs until the deadlines under the new permit kick in. So our interpretation is that the old permit and our post-construction requirements are in place until July 1st.
Okay, so the old permit, you mean the 2004 permit?
Correct.
And our post-construction requirements, you mean the requirements we passed in 2012.
Correct.
So, and I guess they're asserting that because all the petitions were ruled moot, because the resolution was now moot, that we couldn't apply the resolution?
That's what they're arguing. And at some point here, I'm going to want to divert this discussion to Jessica. But our understanding is that this OCC, the Office of Chief Counsel, hasn't ruled on those petitions as being moot yet.
That's correct. OCC has not dismissed the petitions as moot yet. And since the old permit is currently still in effect until June, so is the older resolution adopted last year. So, yes, those are still in effect today.
Okay, so even though the board considers the petitions moot, the OCC has to rule on it as well?
What happened during the Phase 2 adoption proceeding was that staff counsel for the State Board, who is also reviewing the petition, stated that most likely they are moot, but they will be reviewing them individually, and they have not dismissed them yet. And that was in February, and as of now, they have not been dismissed.
Okay, and finally, what I gather from the letter from the cities is that they want more time for ordinance revision because until we actually adopt something, they don't want they don't want the clock to start running until we adopt something. And would you characterize our position as essentially you can telling them you can adopt ordinances that simply incorporate by reference our order? Is that the reason we're saying they don't need more time?
Yeah, well, you know, we have adopted something, and it's in effect now, the post-construction requirements. And then to answer your question, the municipalities can incorporate our requirements by way of reference.
And I assume that the Coastal Commission is going to get up and tell us that they're okay with the municipalities incorporating by reference our order into their ordinances.
I'm not sure it's that. It might be a little more complex than that, in that eventually the Coastal Commission, through a longer process, is probably going to want some kind of ordinance information, but that's not going to prevent the municipalities from implementing the requirements.
So just so I'm clear, are we saying that they don't need more time because they already know what we're going to adopt in July, or are we saying that they don't need more time because they can incorporate by reference and so it's not that complicated?
I would say the second for sure, and then I'll say the second scenario is.
Thank you.
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick questions. The 1.963 multiplier you're continuing to work through, was the original problem with that it was just too confusing or too harsh when they actually used that process?
We thought the 1.963, and we still do think it's a reasonable and protective and conservative approach, but it's one approach, and we're acknowledging that there's other approaches for calculating the amount of runoff. And so we're just looking at it closer and refining it. The end result will be less water retained on site.
Okay, so if I was a user out there, where you're going with that is to probably lessen the impact from the customer standpoint, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then you mentioned a public comment period. Can you tell me when you'd have a draft out and then when you would anticipate that, what would be the duration of that public comment period before the July meeting?
April 8th is when we would have the package out for public comment, and it would be a 30-day comment period.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. One of the Coastal Commission speaker cards said available for questions, I believe. Wait a minute. Yeah, and the other did not. Does that mean Mr. Halperin would like to address the board? Right now would be fine. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Young, members of the board. Alex Halperin with the California Coastal Commission. I'm here with my colleague, Tamara Doan. And we do understand that some questions have been raised regarding the interaction of between your Phase 2 stormwater requirements and local government obligations under the Coastal Act. Your staff asked us if someone from the Coastal Commission could be here to further coordination between our agencies and to answer any questions that the board might have, and Ms. Stone and I were happy to do so. So I'm primarily here to answer questions, but I did want to make a few preliminary remarks. First of all, most of the local governments within your jurisdiction, whose jurisdictions also extend into the coastal zone, do have what we call local coastal programs, or LCPs, which are plans required by the Coastal Act to regulate development and include both land use plans and zoning ordinances, among other things. Pursuant to Article 4 of Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act, those LCPs have to include requirements for all development projects to ensure the protection of water quality, both in the construction and in the post-construction phases. If local governments are adopting new, more rigorous standards pursuant to this board's Phase 2 stormwater requirements, those new requirements should be incorporated into the updated versions of their LCPs, both to make those LCPs consistent with other local ordinances and also to enable those requirements to be imposed through coastal development permits. To that end, we are in the process of developing sample language that could be inserted into LCPs, both to recognize the requirements that they'll be adopting pursuant to this board's requirements and also to avoid any conflicting or overlapping requirements. We would expect those LCPs to be updated in the near term, preferably within the year of this board's September deadline, if indeed that's the deadline that this board adopts. However, the Coastal Commission doesn't have the authority to force local governments to update their LCPs, so we can't say for sure when that'll happen. But that timing issue is a separate issue and need not affect your process unless there's some direct conflict between the new requirements that this board imposes and the directives existing within the LCPs, and we don't believe that there are any such conflicts, then there's no reason why those two sets of requirements can't coexist. In terms of how these two sets of requirements will function, local governments will be able to impose conditions in their non-Coastal Act development permits based on their new local ordinances, and then subsequently, once the NPDES standards are integrated into their LCPs, they'll also be able to control development in the coastal zone through the coastal development permit process. So hopefully that provides some additional clarity about the relationship between the two processes and will help facilitate coordination between our agencies. And again, I'm available for questions if you have any.
Great, thank you. Any board questions? Mr. Johnston, Dr. Hunter?
Just one quick question. So let me see if I understand this correctly. What you're saying is, so we have a process. Our stormwater permit is going to require some ordinance changes for the municipalities affected by it. And what you're saying is that the requirement, the additional requirement you place on cities that extend into the coastal zone, is that they have a separate coastal plan, local coastal plan, that hopefully within a year or so of updating their ordinances, they update the local coastal plan, but that there is nothing that stops them from updating their, or you don't stop them from updating their ordinances on whatever schedule they're updating them on pursuant to our order. Is that correct?
That's correct. Obviously, there's a lot that's in any municipal code. Most of it is not part of the local coastal program, and so it's outside of our jurisdiction. We have no authority over that. And again, unless there's some direct conflict between that and what's in the local coastal program, and we don't see any, then there's no reason why the two can't coexist.
Now, so just to be clear, if you have a city that exists all or partially in the coastal zone, the requirements that we put on them, that they update with their ordinances, take effect presumably when their ordinances are updated. The coastal zone part of the city, those requirements take effect when the local coastal program, is that what it's called, is updated and approved by you?
Well, I would presume, and this may not be true in every municipality, but I would presume that the requirements that they're adopting pursuant to your authority would be citywide or countywide, and so they would apply in the coastal areas as well. It's just that for any particular development project, a developer may need multiple permits, a conditional use permit, a special use permit. They would also need a coastal development permit. And for the coastal development permit in particular, the standards in the LCP are the ones that govern. So if you have more stringent standards that the local government has adopted pursuant to your directive, then they would not be able to impose those standards in the coastal development permit unless they're actually part of the LCP, but they could certainly impose them through the vehicle of whatever other permits they're issuing. And if they're more stringent than the coastal development permit's requirements, then the more stringent requirements would be the applicable relevant ones.
Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Hunter?
And in that same line of thinking, without sounding negative, without sounding somewhat skeptical that those LCPs will be updated, I am aware that some of those LCPs have been standing for quite some time, and there are reasons why those LCPs are not opened up and brought up to new standards. So from my perspective, and based on what you just said to Mr. Johnston, are standards which could be more rigorous than what currently exists in an existing LCP would actually be beneficial for those areas that are in the coastal zone where the LCP is 20 years or more
They may even motivate local governments to want to update their LCPs because then there'd be no concern anymore about the requirements would already be in place for the city. So if it were the case, and I certainly am not saying that it is, that some local government might otherwise be reticent to update standards, the standards would already have been updated through your action, so there'd be no reason not to do so through the LCP as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Jordan, I didn't get a signal from you. I guess that means no question.
I was actually just looking at the City of Santa Barbara's local coastal plan, and conveniently enough, they did last update it in 1994, which I think is a date we just mentioned here. And my experience with the LCP, of course, is that it's a very, very broad kind of pick and choose how you'll apply it. It has to do with quality of life, to the general plan, to environmental protections, and so it's apparent at least that the City of Santa Barbara has been following that process, and I imagine they will. So some do.
Some do. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Helpern? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Ms. Stone, I guess you're going to wait, or did you want to address the board? Please do.
Thank you, Chairman and the board. My simple presence here really is to speak to any questions that you might have about how staff would interact with the agencies. We have come to the JERT process meetings in the second round and tried to express willingness to work directly with the municipalities to try and facilitate an easy adoption of policies into that. And we are willing to be quite specific in looking at water quality policies only. There has been accusations over the years of, you know, the extended reach of the Coastal Commission once an LCP is opened. As Ms. Dr. Hunter mentioned, there are many LCPs that come from the 80s and the 90s that could really use updating. And so there is a tendency whenever one is opened for a general purpose update to look broader scope. So we are sort of promising that that we would work with the municipalities simply to look at the water quality policies that were affected by these changes and to bring those updates in water quality into the LCPs. And the only, I did have one of Alex's points and a question from Dr. Hunter that I wanted to express one point of concern for the staff of the agency is that if a particular ordinance is not in the local coastal program and someone appeals a CDP to our agency, to our commission, then we cannot enforce an ordinance that isn't in the local coastal program. So an ordinance can be in the city or county's municipal code, and they can apply it to a permit, even a permit in the coastal zone. But when that permit gets appealed and comes to our agency, we cannot look at those additional ordinances. We can only look at what's in the LCP. Hence, our request that the updates happen in the LCP, because then that gives us the ability to enforce those ordinances. So I'm happy to speak to any questions you might have about how we would work with them. We have the Central Coast District and the South Central Coast District, which is Santa Barbara. All of the rest of your region is within our Central Coast District, where I work. Dan Carl is the district director there.
And I do know who you are because you filled out the card, but yes. I'm the only one who's seen it other than Dr. Wolf.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I'm sorry. My name is Tamara Doan. I'm a water quality analyst with the California Coastal Commission.
Okay.
Sorry.
And you are from the Santa Cruz office.
I work in the Santa Cruz office. My job duties extend across the state of California.
Right. And as opposed to Mr. Halpern, who is from the main office in San Francisco.
Okay. We both work statewide.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Any
questions for Ms. Doan? Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Let's go to our speakers. And we have one, two, three. I have six speakers. We'll just take them in order. Steve Wagner, followed by Kathleen Garnard and Aaron Maker. Then Steve Kahn, Tricia Wotan, and Noah Garrison, in that order.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. I am Steve Wagner, the Public Works Director for the City of Goleta, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to be before you today speaking on the future or the status of the PCRs and this future process that you're going to undertake towards adoption. I will want to clarify right up front that we don't believe the state supported the previously adopted PCRs. If they would have supported those PCRs, they would have incorporated them into the state permit. And it wasn't just for a procedural issue, because if it was just for a procedural issue, it would have stated that in their findings. And that's not what they said. When they held a workshop prior to their adoption, there was a whole bunch of people with a lot of concerns on the Central Coast PCRs, not only from within the region, but across the state. Let me read you on page three of your report, just an excerpt that's in here. After receiving extensive public comment on attachment J, that was the old attachment D, the state board determined that while the board continues to support a watershed process-based approach to hydro modification requirements, the joint effort process should be allowed to evolve and proceed without incorporation into this order to address several unresolved issues acknowledged by the parties to that process, including regional board staff. That's why this was not incorporated. There was concern from agencies on the adoption of those prior PCRs because they weren't fully public vetted. The JERT process, the stakeholder process, was going along pretty good through a higher level review. And then the final adoption of the criteria and the justification was never really vetted. That's why they're saying, hey, do not approve anything until there's this public process. So while I'm really encouraged that there's going to be a public process to publicly vet out these concerns, I am very concerned with staff's approach and direction in this staff report and based on personal communications with staff, that this is a fait accompli action, that we're just going to take the last stuff and readopt it. It's not called for readoption. It's called for full reconsideration. Your action is going to be a de novo hearing, all things new, everything considered. So these things need to be and should be publicly vetted. That's why we're all here. We're confident we can get to a really good set of PCRs that are scientifically supportable, technically feasible, and achievable that to the maximum extent practical is required by law. That's what we want to participate in. But the staff report is narrowing it down to this one issue, the multiplier. And they're focused on implementation on a schedule that cannot be done. I think it was a good question here, because in order to adopt enforceable mechanisms, an ordinance, there's a schedule for adoption. There's notices and hearings that must be made according to law. There's multiple hearings that need to be done before that happens. And it's not a two-month process. And we can't start now before you've decided what
is. Can you wrap it up, Mr. Wagner?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you today. I think you're going to hear a lot of this. Our hope is that we're going to consider these things. Let's not put off all these issues. This isn't horseshoes. Good enough isn't right. This is regulatory process. Let's vet all these processes out and go forward. E12 goes into effect. There is no environmental cliff we're going to fall off in July if this is not adopted. There's time to do this right. Let's do it right. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Wagner? Okay. Thank you. Ms. Grenard?
I'm Kathleen Garnand, just plain old Garnand, with the County of Santa Barbara. I am involved with the Joint Effort Review Team, and I also I worked with the state on the E12, the post-construction portion of the permit. I really appreciate the PCRs, and I've told Dominic this before. It's great to have these conversations. I'm glad that this board has come out with setting a really high bar because it allows these opportunities to have really careful consideration about what's right and what's not right and what's going to work, what's not going to work. My biggest concern right now is the 95th percentile and what that means in a watershed process context. My recommendation is that in July, that instead of readopting, that you do take the time, delay adoption, and reconsider these other aspects that haven't really been completely expressed. And the main missing part for me is this: is there's we had the technical team come up with these narrative descriptors. It was like minimize overland flow, promote infiltration. They looked at geologic time and the character of the watershed. And that narrative was then turned into the post-construction requirements, which became a numeric requirement, the 95th percentile and infiltrating that tire volume on the site. And what we don't have is that bridge between the two. We don't have a technical analysis that says this leads to this. We're not sure if it's trying to replicate pre-development hydrology. We haven't seen what the effect is, looking at that carefully through a technical analysis. And providing that justification, I think, is really important because these regulations, there's nothing quite like them. They're out there. They've set a high boundary. I mean, the federal regulations are similar. They have that 95th percentile, but they also include an option where you can match pre-development runoff. We contacted Robert Gu with the EPA. He was involved in that 95th percentile criteria, and we asked him, why did you pick that? And what he said from an email, he said, in some areas, it should be the 85th percentile storm, in others, the 98th. Ideally, someone in your area should try and figure out what storm size you should control to maintain the hydrologic stability of your streams. And he called that 95th percentile storm a blunt instrument, and he recommended that it be sharpened with local data. And that's what needs to happen. So we need to really express that difference between 85th and 95th. I mean, it sounds like it's a 10% increase, but it's really almost doubling the rainfall depth and therefore the volume retention on site. As an example, Santa Barbara, our 95th percentile is 2.4 inches. And if this is trying to replicate pre-development hydrology, it's hard to imagine that every time it rains more than 2.4 inches in Santa Barbara that we never have any runoff because we have runoff. That would mean last year we had no runoff in our streams. Streams, they behave. We need to look at that rainfall runoff relationship. So my solution is that the state permits come out. I think it's very good. The NRDC was involved in reviewing it. Noah's actually here today. We worked with the state. We worked with technical consultants. It has specific design criteria in it that I think are doable and implementable.
Garnan, can you wrap it up, please?
Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some value in looking at the strengths of that and considering how it can also meet our unique characteristics here on the Central Coast. So I don't think there's any downside in delaying a few months. We'll be in sync with implementation of E12 of the state permit, and we have that opportunity to look more carefully at how the state permit can be incorporated.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the speaker? Okay. Ms. Maker?
Hello, I'm Erin Maker with the City of Carpinteria. I continue to have concerns with the feasibility of the 95th percentile infiltration requirements. I do appreciate all of the effort that staff has put into developing these requirements. However, at this time, I do not feel that it has been shown that using the 95th percentile will have a greater cost-benefit ratio than the currently widely used 85th percentile. In many areas, increasing the infiltration to 95th percentile almost doubles the volume of water stored on site. I suggest two alternatives. The Central Coast region has the option of adopting the requirements in the new state permit These requirements have gone through an exhaustive review and support and have the support of a majority of stakeholders. If the Central Coast Regional Board chooses not to implement the state requirements, I feel that the draft post-construction requirements need a comprehensive analysis prior to implementation. As written, the requirements require a substantial amount of effort for agency staff and developers alike. If the Central Coast region chooses to move forward with these requirements, I think analyzing them to determine feasibility is necessary. The September deadline for implementation does not give adequate time for such analysis. As all joint effort participating agencies are currently implementing interim post-construction guidelines for all projects, there does not seem to be any harm in delaying the implementation date to do this analysis. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any board questions? Okay. Mr. Kahn, followed by Tricia Wotan.
Thank you for your time. My name is Steve Kahn, City of Santa Maria. The City of Santa Maria is on the Santa Maria Valley groundwater basin, and most of our water infiltrates into the ground. We have sand throughout our city, so it percolates fairly well, infiltrates into the ground. We use this water for our water supply combined with state water, so we really care about our water quality. The City of Santa Maria has been active with staff on implementing the post-construction requirements, and we will be committed to implementing them and improving our water quality. Our main concern is the details of the requirements are not worked out, and this is detailed in your staff report. Staff anticipates short-term issues to be resolved in July and long-term issues to be worked out in late 2013 or 2014. The requirements should not be put into effect until all details have been worked out and the MS4s have time to implement. The city recommends that you let the post-construction requirements in the state phase 2 permit, as mentioned by earlier speakers, go into effect and allows time for staff and stakeholders to work out all the details of the watershed-based requirements. These requirements would then be adopted by the board and the agencies would work towards implementing them. The post-construction requirements in the state phase 2 permit would be in effect during this time so the water would be protected. The city is committed to infiltrating high-quality surface water in our groundwater basin and will continue to work with your staff to do so. One concept is to have a workshop in front of this board prior to your July meeting just to vet and work out all those issues. So I thank you for your time and for your listening. If you have any questions.
Thank you for your comments. Any board questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wotan, followed by Noah Garrison, and then Leroy Cadena, and then Steve Shemek.
Hi, thank you. My name is Tricia Wotan with the City of Monterey. Just briefly, I first want to state that, of course, on the Central Coast, we as an agency and partner agencies, we greatly value our waterways. We work really hard to protect water quality, and we do share in the belief that managing them on a watershed scale is definitely an effective approach into the future. That said, we just wanted to point out a couple things. With regard to CEQA, in order to conduct a CEQA review, a local agency must have what's called a finite, stable, and accurate project description. This is a well-established fact in case law. And adopting the unfinished PCRs by resolution doesn't actually relieve us of considering the whole of the project in that review. And we just want to point out that reliance on these regulations when they're not yet final is a big concern for us, not only when it comes to reviewing the whole of the action that we'd wish to take before our local agency, but also we feel that going forth before having the final provisions would be premature and then it would expend valuable time and resources at the local agencies. And it could also have the potential or likelihood of causing the public to implement provisions locally that are not yet final at the regional board or have been finaled at the regional board. And so we have a concern with this, and that's part of where the request for a bit more time than September to be our enforcement date comes from. Lastly, I just wanted to state City of Monterey is the stakeholder that Phil had mentioned having some legal concerns related to ministerial projects, and so we do appreciate the fact that we'll have an opportunity to work with your staff to get through that potential legal concern. And it's just as he said, a lot of the provisions in the PCRs require local staff discretion in how they're implemented. And very clearly in state law, the definition of ministerial says that we cannot exercise, we can exercise little to no judgment when it comes to ministerial applications and projects. So if we can resolve that, I think that's one technical issue that we could have the opportunity to get through. Lastly, I just want to state I'm hoping that the JURT effort could just be more inclusive of more MS4s than just the few that was sort of handpicked for that. And we just ask that it be open to anyone who wishes to participate and help problem solve these technical issues. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any board questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wotan. Mr. Garrison? And you did request 7 minutes in advance.
I did. So thank you. I appreciate the board's indulgence. Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Noah Garrison. I'm with the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm going to speak on some of the sort of technical specifics of the post-construction requirements, but I do want to address a couple of comments that have been made about the Phase 2 permit and how the post-construction requirements and potentially application of a 95th percentile or other standard may have fit into that permit. The first thing I would say is I did speak and work with board staff, but I also supported including a 95th percentile standard in that permit. It ultimately did not go that way, but we support the stronger retention standards. Secondly, the concern that was raised about how this would be incorporated into that permit and that the board felt it had not been vetted, it is my recollection at least that the board felt that the two biggest concerns were that, one, 2 years for them to attempt to do watershed analyses across the state was simply not enough time for the effort that's been to replicate the effort that's been done here already. And so they didn't feel they had time to necessarily conduct the needed analyses and then incorporate it into the permit that way. The other concern was that it had not been vetted by stakeholders statewide that this would apply to, not to stakeholders in the Central Coast, where this has been part of a public process for quite some time. So that should hopefully alleviate some of the concerns that were raised there. I'm going to start into a presentation here. I'll start with a very basic principle that I'll hopefully be able to skip through very quickly, which is just that stormwater controls are necessary and they're practicable. We need these controls. We have pollution issues at our beaches. We have pollution in our inland waterways. We have flooding issues that occur from this. We absolutely need to address stormwater pollution in this state. And as a sort of a picture to that, this is a impaired water statewide, and there are a number of impaired waters, one or more pollutants for one or more uses, statewide in the Central Coast region, and certainly any number of other beneficial uses that are threatened with impairment as a result of stormwater throughout this region. So there is a reason behind pushing for these stronger standards to make sure that we protect our waterways. MEP, the maximum extent practicable standard, is what drives this process, and there's been a lot of discussion of feasibility, practicability, what should be the upper standard, and discussion that 85th percentile is basically the standard that's been adopted statewide in California, and that's absolutely true. As a sort of minimum bar, people have looked at the 85th percentile and said, well, this is doable. But that's not really how the maximum extent practicable standard works. We need to look at, on a region-by-region or location-by-location basis, what the maximum that can be done is in a practical manner. And as the analyses have shown in the Central Coast region, more can be done than meeting the 85th percentile standard. And as a result, it's required under the Clean Water Act that that actually be implemented. I just want to give an example to sort of disabuse the notion that 85th percentile is the accepted standard everywhere. A recent MS4 permit for Washington, D.C. requires the 90th percentile standard for retention. That's about 1.2 inches of rainwater, depending on where you are in the city. There are a number of permits and ordinances on the East Coast that require at least 1 inch, if not more, in several circumstances. The national standard, as you heard, that's put up by the federal government requires a 95th percentile standard. And despite claims that maybe we should be looking just at the hydrology and trying to match pre-development hydrology, I think it's important to note that there are many circumstances that for the developed environment, when we actually build something, it makes sense to retain more runoff or to control more runoff than would have been retained naturally. And the reason is that under natural conditions, if runoff is flowing over, say, chaparral or wooded areas or pick your natural habitat, you don't really introduce many pollutants or constituents into it that would cause pollution to our waterways. If you pave over that with a parking lot or a rooftop surface or any other type of developed land area, you're now introducing pollutants. You have motor oils, metals, animal waste, on and on and on, that can be picked off that surface and transported to our waterways. So it makes sense to retain more runoff from a developed surface than it does under natural conditions. We absolutely need to take into consideration potential impacts on hydrology and flow in our waterways, but it does make sense to retain more runoff, and that's why 85th percentile or 95th percentile in many cases is the proper standard, and not looking at just what the hydrology was before development occurred. I want to talk about the 95th percentile standard specifically. This is from a study that was done by Dr. Richard Horner, who was a member of the National Academy of Sciences panel on stormwater. And what he did, this is for the San Diego region, he's looked at a number of areas around the country, and he took five different types of development. He looked at a generic plan for a multifamily residential site, for single-family residential sites, both on a large-scale development site and a smaller-scale development. He looked at a commercial site, such as a restaurant or a box store that had a large parking area attached to it, and he looked at an urban redevelopment site that had maybe less than 10% of the site available as open space for stormwater controls. On the left-hand side are those five developments, and the blue lines go to the top. That's the amount of runoff that Dr. Horner found could be retained on-site using only infiltration practices, so not taking advantage of evapotranspiration, not looking at capture and harvesting practices, just infiltration in the available open space. And what he found was that you could actually retain the full volume of runoff on most of these sites. The two bars that go across, the orange bar on the sort of about two-thirds of the way up, is the 85th percentile standard, or how much runoff would need to be retained to meet an 85th percentile retention standard. That can easily be met on these sites. But what's more telling is that the 95th percentile standard, which is that red bar that goes across, can be met and exceeded on most of these sites, or all of these sites, where infiltration is an available practice. Looking at the left side of this chart, the sort of lighter blue lines, he looked at sites where infiltration was largely impaired or reduced, at sites that have D-soils or heavily clay-influenced soils, so infiltration really isn't an option. And what he found was that even on those sites, making use of simple rooftop dispersion practices or for commercial settings where there might actually be a demand for the water, capture and harvesting practices, you can still retain a huge volume of the runoff, you know, something on the order of one-half to two-thirds of what's required for the 95th percentile standard. So even in the worst-case scenarios where infiltration is simply not possible on a site, you can still retain a large volume of runoff. But importantly here, those aren't the sites that should control what the overall standard is. Those are sites where you provide an off-ramp in the permit. You provide some opportunity for infeasibility where they can use biofiltration or treat and discharge practices or perform off-site mitigation. What's really important here is that the 95th percentile standard is achievable on the vast majority of sites where some amount of infiltration is available on the project. And so with that, we would say that based on this report, 95th percentile infiltration is practicable. It's feasible in this sense. It can be done, and therefore it should be required. And the standards that are in place absolutely implement that requirement, and they do it properly. I'd like to finish with just pointing out that there is an alternate reason why we should promote and aim for higher infiltration or higher retainment of stormwater, and that's that we can then put that water to use. When we allow that runoff to flow off, certainly it's needed for habitat and biologic processes, but most of the time it's basically wastewater. If we capture it and can actually put it to a beneficial use, incorporate it for local or regional water supply, it becomes a tremendous benefit for the area. And I cite to this chart, this is sort of the scare chart that's used in climate predictions for California, but that's a model of predictions for what's going to happen to the Sierra snowpack, which is the state's largest source of freshwater.
Can you wrap it up, Mr.
Absolutely.
Garrison?
And what it shows is that we have the potential to lose 70% to 80% of the snowpack by the end of the century. We are going to need alternative water supply sources, and using 95th percentile capture absolutely provides us with one, and one that should be used. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Board questions? Mr. Johnston, and then Mr. Harris?
Yeah, I have a question. I have two questions, actually. Your slides regarding feasibility capture over the 85th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
The first slide referenced three examples, one of which was 90th percentile, and that was 1.2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two were, I believe, a one-inch standard. Mm-hmm. Somebody just spoke here saying that in their city, the 95th percentile storm is 2 inches.
Right.
So your examples don't seem to gel with what a 95th percentile storm is on the Central Coast. And I had a similar question regarding your example based on San Diego. I don't know what a 95th percentile storm in San Diego is, and I'm not sure how applicable that is to the Central Coast. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The question?
Well, your first question about the other permit examples I gave, those were basically to eliminate the notion that the 85th percentile is just the accepted standard and should be used everywhere. It's absolutely not. There are any number of standards nationwide that produce a higher standard, and as was pointed out, the federal government's requirements is a 95th percentile standard where feasible. And one of the key things I think that goes with that is that in any of these standards, the idea is where feasible. If on any given site or any given location or even a sort of a localized region, 95th percentile ends up not being feasible, then there are off-ramps in the permit to provide for that. But the point is to shoot for what's practicable for a majority or a plurality of sites and then provide a way out, not to shoot for the lowest possible bar and then hit it because that's easy. There are any number of sites that are going to be able to meet that higher standard. As far as the chart by Dr. Horner, I can provide all the technical data. I have copies of that report. It has the rainfall amounts. Dr. Horner has also looked at areas in San Francisco, in Ventura County, and other areas throughout the state, so there are plenty of comparisons to be made. But in the vast majority of cases, he found on sites where there is infiltration available, you can retain virtually the entire volume of runoff on the site. Where there are areas where infiltration may pose a concern because of high groundwater, because of clay soils, any other potential infeasibility concern, again, there are off-ramps in the permit, but even still, there are large amounts of retention that can be achieved on those sites, and so you achieve the maximum you can for those specific sites. But that doesn't mean we set the overall standard low when many sites can, in fact, exceed it.
Mr. Harris.
Dr. Warner, he's from Washington State.
He is. He's at University of Washington.
This particular study, who paid for that study?
This was commissioned by NRDC, but we had him analyze it and provide all of the technical data. It was conducted by Dr. Horner independently with a grad student from UCSB acting as an assistant on the project.
Do you know if the study was peer-reviewed?
I don't believe it was. It has been shared with EPA, and they have looked it over and seem to agree with the findings.
Okay. I know for a fact that the document was has not been peer-reviewed,
mm-hmm.
So I just want to make that part of the record that
absolutely.
NRDC paid for this study and that it was not a peer-reviewed study.
That's correct, although I would state that in no way did we ask Dr. Horner to reach or find any conclusions. We asked him to look at the standards.
I just want to be transparent about that.
Certainly. And as I said, I'll provide copies of the study to your staff, and I'm happy to provide an electronic copy so that the board can view it as well.
Okay. Any other board questions? All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Leroy Cadena, and then Steve Shemek, last speaker. And then we'll have staff, Dominic and Phil, provide us your input into what we've heard from these speakers. If you guys have any comments to share with us.
Thank you for letting me speak. It's Leroy Cadena, a licensed civil engineer, worked for a private engineering firm here on the Central Coast. I've been in the Central Coast for about 20 years, and I'd like to say I've always considered myself as a steward of the land. I actively a leader in the Boy Scouts, so I camp out on the beaches, up in the watersheds, hopefully not next to any improvements. But I would like to say that I am not quite a dinosaur, but I'm getting there. I've seen a lot of changes. I've lived across the nation. I've lived in Texas where there was no requirements back in the 80s. I saw atrocities with erosions and sediments and things. Moved out to D.C., lived in D.C., saw improvements there with the Chesapeake Bay. Since I've been here on the Central Coast, I've seen a lot of changes, and I think the board's done a good job. A lot of people spoke today and talked about reasons why you should consider postponing, readopting the current new standards. I'm here to talk about a little bit about from the developer's standpoint and also from an engineer that's supporting the developers. Part of the problem is I just don't think you're given enough time to notify the public. I've got projects out here, small projects even, that are going to be affected by the standards. Well, which standards do we go to? So obviously we have to move the project forward. Projects take 6 months, 2 years to get approved. And we're not talking large projects. I'm talking about one particular project is a two-acre lot split into two one-acre parcels. And now a lot of the land that's been developed was easy. Now we're moving into the harder, steeper countries, different soils, clay soils. As Steve Kahn said, Santa Maria, it's all sand. We can infiltrate. I've got a site that's steep on all sides, and we can't infiltrate. We could have some potential geologic issues by infiltrating on and we have to do that at the toe of the slope. So retention and release is the option for this particular project. And also listening to the NRDC's comments, I was surprised as well as a 1.2-inch storm. I don't disagree with that. I haven't seen the respect, but I know that in D.C. they get somewhere near 42 inches of rain a year. What we get here in the Central Coast is maybe 16 at the most. We don't get a lot of rain. So I would caution using broad national statistics and trying to apply them locally. And the other thing is like I said, I'm in favor of stormwater quality and stormwater retention, but not imposing unnecessarily stringent requirements like the 1.96 factor. That's right, almost twice as much storage than perhaps may need to be. If after review, and I agree with Steve Kahn that you should have a study session in reviewing this and to come up with a number. But imposing this because you have a deadline and you want to get it done, I think you should consider especially the 1.96 value.
Can you wrap it up, Mr.?
I'm done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any board questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Shimek, you're the last speaker.
Thank you, everyone, and I always try and begin by saying thank you for your service, so thank you. My name is Steve Shimek with the Otter Project in Monterey Coastkeeper. Many of the municipal stakeholders here today are asking for delays. I want to remind everyone that this process has been going on for a long time. It's been well-publicized. It's been predictable. We knew we were getting here. There's no real reason for further delays at all. And in fact, as staff has mentioned, there's been two previous delays, and now we're getting into the home stretch here. We've known that we were headed this way for a very long time. Now we're just getting there. Stay on track. Please do not grant any more delays. It's time to move on and move ahead. The State Board has always considered the regional boards as a place for innovation and, in fact, experimentation. And, frankly, that's what they're expecting here. They are expecting this board and your post-construction standards to be one of the most progressive experiments in the state, and they're hopeful. I think it's going to work. I have a lot of faith in Darla and the direction that we're headed. At least some of the stakeholders want to essentially start over. Please don't do that. I mean, we've heard the words that this next hearing is going to be everything on the table. Let's start over. I hope not. We also heard today somebody say there's no harm in delay. Really? There is harm in delay. The impacts of stormwater pollution are well known and accepted. There is harm in delay. We've heard that that we should take the time to work out all issues. We will never work out all issues on these thorny topics, whether it be the ag waiver or whether it be this. There will always be issues. If you wait for all issues to be worked out, you will wait forever. We also heard the last speaker say that we're moving into steeper terrain. You know, housing starts are picking up. There's a lot of stuff going on. That is an argument to take action now. That is not an argument for further delay. Please don't start over. Please do not delay. Make the decisions along the timeline that everyone is expecting. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our speakers. Any questions for Mr. Shimek? Okay. Thank you. I'd like to give staff opportunity to comment on anything that we've heard, and if Coastal Commission staff has anything they would like to add, I'd like to invite them to do so. I mean, they are sister agency staff with expertise in this area. So, okay. Okay. Gentlemen.
Rather than go on a point-by-point rebuttal of everything you heard today, I just want to revisit the history that we've gone through to get to this point. These arguments are not new. We've heard them all before when you adopted these requirements in September. We're going to hear them again in July, obviously. So I think rather than spend a lot of time going through all our rebuttals at this point, you know, we'll be here and ready to support the requirements again in July with a recommendation for you all. And so rather than rebut every point, I would rather see if there's any particular point that the board is interested in a rebuttal from us on, and maybe we can do it that way.
Well, the 95th percentile seems to be kind of a focus issue in many of the speakers. And my understanding is if a site cannot retain 95%, then there's an off-ramp for that. There's an exception that applies. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And then what really is the issue? Because then it doesn't seem to be an issue to me. Because I know in Salinas we've got, you know, areas with clay. We know that we're not going to hit 95%. But, you know, some alternative is going to be employed.
Yeah, the alternatives are in the permit, are in the resolution now. And that one particular strategy for complying through the attachment D multiplier that's being revised, it's substantially doable. There's off ramps where you can't do it. We have thresholds that, you know, you have to go up to a certain point and then you're basically off the hook for the remainder. And I have the same question as why do we keep hearing this? That the 95th is not doable, 95th is not doable. And I can only speculate that there's a concern that it, you know, just continues to ratchet up the, you know, the requirements. But when you actually look at how they're being applied, our conclusion and our contention is that they are feasible and we provide for the off-ramps. Just to give you an example, the sizing approach that we're developing through the re-examination of Attachment D has been, you know, tested under different scenarios, and the entire retention volume of 95th percentile of runoff is attainable in almost all the conditions except the D soils. So it is doable.
Okay.
It's just not clear to me. I guess there's the concern that people don't want to, it's inconvenient for them to do it. They anticipate a larger facility potentially, but with the sizing approach we're using, we're really getting that down to a reasonable level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll hear again about it, but I can't answer the question entirely myself. So
now you have a September implementation date, assuming something gets passed in July.
Right.
We have a September implementation date. Is that what does that mean? That they have to begin the process of, because they got to adopt an ordinance. We know they can't do that. No one can do that by September. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Well, yes, they can do that. But they've had a long time to develop these ordinances. Before the post-construction requirements were adopted, that was preceded by a period of 2 years where
right.
they were analyzing the gaps in their code, evaluating their municipal code to determine what obstacles there were to implementation of LID, starting to line things up and do the analysis leading up to the actual code revisions. Once the PCRs were adopted in September of 2012, 6 months ago, they were supposed to begin the process of incorporating those requirements into ordinances. If they didn't do anything until now, I would say they basically were asking for a, you know, they're basically avoiding the requirements. They should have been, from September 12th of 2012, working on the adoption process and revising their codes. I think what a lot of them did was they watched the phase two process and decided they would gamble on that, altering the playing field, and then basically wait to do anything, and then say, well, we can't do anything because we haven't had time, everything's changing. And we're arguing that that's not the case, that our requirements aren't really changing. We're looking at one particular revision to what you've adopted already, which is the multiplier. And we're asking you to revisit the issue again and adopt it again. There is no effort to narrow the scope of the review. The entire set of requirements are going to be available for public review and vetted entirely in their entirety again before July. So the idea that we're constraining it is not true. We are not revising anything except the multiplier. And the fact that the, you know, the reference to swamps is no longer valid, so we have to adjust that. But
do you, Dominic, do you know how many of our dischargers have actually adopted this into ordinance?
Well, we already have Santa Cruz County, the City of Lompoc, and the City of Santa Barbara, who have adopted post-construction requirements and are implementing them. So it's not like no one in our region is capable of doing this. They've already done it.
Well, out of how many?
And we have about 34 entities that are in a position to implement ordinances or implement these through enforceable mechanisms like a city or a county ordinance. And many of them are making good progress. We've met with them all. Staff, I think Phil mentioned in his presentation that staff has actually met with all of the municipalities and talked about their progress toward meeting the requirements. And the majority of them have identified a schedule for doing it and the things they think are potential obstacles, and we've worked with them on some of those things. But we were under the impression that a lot of them are actually making progress toward the adoption. Most of them have actually selected to incorporate by reference so they can prepare the entire municipal ordinance.
Okay. Board questions? Mr. Johnston?
Yeah, there was some mention in the letter from the Monterey and Santa Cruz County cities of wanting to expand the JERT to any of the other MSW2s that wanted to participate. Do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, we've never closed the JERT, and anyone who's asked to participate has been allowed to and has joined us. Steve Wagner recently joined in on the subcommittee, in fact, for the multiplier. So there's never been an obstacle to broader participation. When we convened the JERT originally, our intention was to have each member be a representative, in effect, a conduit of information to a broader constituency or group of people that they were affiliated with. And so we looked for volunteers. I actually recruited in a few cases because we weren't getting the kind of response we were looking for. And that was the first JERT. When our kind of process ended, we reconstituted the JERT, and I reconvened it and requested all those current members to indicate if they wanted to continue and to identify other parties that they might want to recommend. And then I also broaden that and ask for participation broadly. So we don't have any obstacles to broad participation. I do really want to hold on to the concept of the JERT as more of a group of representatives rather than a huge room just where everybody's there. I don't mind them all being there, but I think we need a kind of a core group that's prepared to solve problems, identify problems, and solve the problems. And I know that if we just open this as a broad forum for stakeholders, I think we're going to lose some of the good traction we get on problem solving. So, but I'll definitely look at expanding it to the extent that, you know, people want to join. There's no obstacle.
Okay, Dr. Hunter and Mr. Jeffries? No. Okay, then Dr. Wolf.
Thank you. That was one of my questions because I also thought that the JERT was fairly open and sort of surprised to hear the comment. I think Ms. Wotan made the comment that it was handpicked because I have heard many of the members come forward at different times in the several years. I also had questions about Mr. Wagner's comment that these issues weren't fully vetted and that the state made that observation. So, and I, along with Mr. Garrison, agree that my interpretation, and so I was glad to hear someone else that participated in it, the interpretation there is it hasn't been fully vetted statewide, but that within our region, I have a hard time seeing these particular issues as being characterized as not fully vetted. I think we've had some very productive dialogue. And I want to thank the JERT members because we have had very positive and good commentary coming back to us along the way, that it's been a productive use of time, that it's been a meaningful process, that it's been provided technical assistance and maximized scarce resources in terms of just technical staff support. So, you know, I want to recognize that the JERT has been very effective. So we're at a point where, as Mr. Schumick said, it's time to get to some very difficult milestones. And those milestones have been on this roadmap for quite some time. I will leave it at, I think Mr. Padina made the comment that, you know, we may be asked to retain to 1.6, which is more than necessary. In the state of California, I don't think you can make that claim. I think that anything we can retain is to our benefit. It's to the benefit of our communities to protect our water supply, to the benefit of our economic viability, to assure that we have water for growth. There's so many reasons why that 95th percentile is an important mark to shoot for. And I agree that, with the work that staff is doing now in accommodating the concerns as we get into the weeds now on how those ordinances need to look. What is that language going to look like? I want to thank the Coastal Commission for making a trip today to inform us of their role in helping to provide some of that technical language and to give some assurance to the municipalities that they're not going to be put between two different conflicting perspectives. So it's good you're in the dialogue and that you're contributing to creating some clarity there. But there's more work to be done. So I don't want to, at this point, see any other delays. I think there's room in the process for continuing to clarify, continuing to sort through what is reasonable and what is MEP. And I think that's our standard, and we need to keep that in mind. So that's my thoughts on what I heard today.
Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Dr. Wolf.
Yeah, Dominic, perhaps, to echo a little bit the questions about the JERT composition in an abundance of effort to make sure that there is a good representation. You know, if I understand you correctly, if new applicants would like to join and, within a reasonable number, so that it's still a manageable group, you would be open to, let someone else come on.
Yeah, no one has.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't even heard anybody interested in joining. But okay, certainly thank you.
My next
welcome
question, a earlier speaker was talking about other items that had been raised. And I was curious from your perspective what these other items were beyond the 95 percentile issue.
Well, we've talked about some of those in the joint effort review team. And as Phil Hammer mentioned, we've identified the technical feasibility issues as needing additional clarification, perhaps. A lot of the permits around the state provide sort of a generic clause about technical feasibility, and then subsequently guidance and examples are provided for actually how you navigate or interpret that. And that was the approach that we would prefer to take rather than trying to go back and further refine the definitions within the permit or the requirements. But some of those issues on feasibility, I think Phil actually mentioned, but they include things like the soil types that are restrictive of infiltration, what is the threshold condition perhaps, or what kind of a drawdown time would you use where you have very low infiltration soils. Even though you've sized the facility, you still might want to empty that facility in time to accommodate a subsequent rain event. So there's issues about drawdown times, soil infiltration levels. There's also, we've already kind of taken some initial steps to develop some criteria around determining whether infiltration is something to avoid in areas affected by groundwater contamination or soil contamination. So we'd like to have a more structured and clear process whereby an applicant can say, you know, my site has a plume under it or adjacent to it, and infiltration is really not something I want to do here. In general, that sounds like some smart thinking, but we also don't want, knowing that many sites throughout most of our urbanized areas, many areas in the urban environment are contaminated, we don't want to foreclose on the possibility of doing infiltration where it's still feasible. So we want to develop some guidance around that. The geotechnical hazards exemption or a clause for technical infeasibility could be better defined. It's fairly straightforward. If you know geotechnical issues, they're pretty black and white, but we could provide some additional guidance on that. So those are the issues I think that are going to be ones that we take on over a longer time frame. I think that there's some, you know, wiggle room in how we start to implement, so that resolving all of those immediately at the outset is not imperative.
Okay.
What is imperative is that we actually begin to implement and see where those really become problematic.
And now, thank you for the clarification. And then just one last item. A speaker earlier mentioned a conversation with one of the scientists in terms of storm events. And the comment made was that there was perhaps a need for storm characterization to be performed by our district. That doesn't seem to be, to me, very reasonable in terms of achieving this, because our district goes from San Mateo County to Ventura County, very typically different type of storms between north and south. If we lay over that also, you know, climate change, which seems lately, you know, somewhat ironic. We talk about storm event being that, you know, this is one of the driest year in history, but hopefully next year we'll put this to good work. It doesn't seem reasonable to have a detailed scientific study trying to pinpoint exactly the storm events that would be impacting each of the municipalities rather than, you know, taking our conservative, you know, 95 percentile and trying to become a meteorologist of the future.
That's right. The use of a 95th percentile metric or parameter and an event-based approach is in fact a conservative approach that is a surrogate for a much more involved and potentially more expensive analysis that might describe pre-development hydrology in a more accurate sense on a particular location. And it's not something we can conduct region-wide, so that's where we're coming from with that approach.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you remind me, in talking about the technical infeasibility, that the choice there is generally for a developer then to find another site, right? Or that's the best choice, right?
The way it works in our requirements is that water quality treatment of runoff up to the 85th percentile event is required for all projects on site. So you can use a flow-based approach, and you could use infiltration if you want, but for water quality treatment for small sites, less than 15,000 square feet, a lot bigger than most small sites, but so you can use a flow-through treatment approach for that on site, and so there's very few sites for which that is infeasible because there's no retention associated with flow through. But with the retention requirement, which kicks in at 15,000 square feet, we are asking that people design facilities that will retain the runoff from the 95th percentile event on site up to the point that they've used 10% of the effective impervious area of the site. If they have additional runoff that can't be infiltrated because they need more than 10% of their site, they have no requirements beyond that.
Okay. So,
but if they don't,
you can stop there.
Okay.
So, because my question where I'm going is when Mr. Garrison throws his graphs up there, or you say that you've looked at case studies, none of those case studies have involved a negative effect on a footprint or a project's scope and size. There have always, in what you guys have looked at, there have always been remedies that haven't affected a project's goals. Would that be a fair statement?
I would say that's a fair statement. They don't design the site to accommodate the runoff. They design the site according to their development goal.
In some places, like downtown Santa Barbara, they're reducing parking requirements and increasing density and unit counts in a highly urban area. But in those situations, those type of situations where you've seen it, there's still a workable remedy to meet those goals without sacrificing the project's economics or where the project wants to go.
The only difference is in other analysis, I don't know if they've constrained the amount of site devoted to best management practices or stormwater control. What they try to do is present reasonable scenarios. So they give the commercial example, which is a typical commercial area, which has a typical amount of imperviousness associated with commercial development. They do a single-family residential example with a typical amount of imperviousness associated with that. And they hold to those ratios of impervious to non-impervious, or to pervious. And then they make the BMPs work within those constraints. In our rules, we are allowing people to infiltrate on less than 10% of the site if they can, but if they can't, if they aren't willing to go up to 10% of the site, then they have some off-site requirements.
Okay. Well, that's the part I didn't remember was the absolute out. So
yeah, and the 10%, by the way, was not an arbitrary choice by us. It was proposed by one of the municipalities who pointed out, and we have since confirmed, that the landscaping requirements associated with design and projects throughout most municipalities are roughly in the 10% range. So if you came to a city and said, we want to build something, they'd say, okay, here's your landscaping requirement, and it roughly equates to 10% of the site area in many places. And we've had this confirmed several times by different people. And so our thought was that, well, we aren't pushing them beyond sort of the comfort zone or the existing realm of dedicated area. We're just asking them to make those landscaped areas multifunctional.
Right.
And then we've done the extra work of going through and providing assistance to the cities to modify their landscape code so that they can make those landscape areas multifunctional. And so that's seems like we're hitting it from all different directions.
And my other question was one of the speakers talked about that quote that's pulled from water board, state water board context on not including the joint effort into the proposal
permit
going forward. And
yeah.
So what's your take on that paragraph of quote that's in your staff report?
Well, I don't think the staff at the state board was aware of the amount of scrutiny that their particular language would receive on this particular issue. That and we unfortunately weren't provided an opportunity to look at that and work with them. But my opinion is consistent with Mr. Garrison, who pointed out that the state board did not want to impose an unrealistic time frame for areas outside of the Central Coast to conduct watershed-based stormwater regulation or stormwater requirements. And so they definitely didn't want to put them in there and say, hey, everybody, you have to do this. So that's one thing. I think the state board is absolutely in support of a watershed-based approach. I think they heard a lot of concerns. You heard some of them today about how implementing the specific requirements that we have in other places could not be done without a more extensive vetting of those requirements in those other places. I don't think they were saying you can't do what you're proposing to do on the Central Coast because you haven't vetted it. And that's definitely not what they were getting at. So my opinion is that the State Board is very much in support of our approach. They actually included a requirement that we work with them in an annual reporting process to describe the experience we're having implementing our regulations to inform their development of similar approaches.
Okay. I too also think that you're headed in the right direction. I think we talked about all these things once before, 6 months ago, and I think you're right that they're going to come up again and talk about them again in July, and we should just move forward with the draft and get your open comments period going and be ready to go at this again in July with the an attempt to adopt it.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Coastal Commission staff if they wanted to offer any comments on what they've heard. Give you the opportunity. If not, okay. Mr. Helper.
Again, Alex Helper with the Coastal Commission. I just wanted to thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you and let you know that we're looking forward to working with you and your staff and also with the municipalities on their LCPs. We're
okay.
Here to help.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, folks, this was just a status item. So we have concluded it as of now. This will be revisited in July of the summer. And we're going to take our lunch break. And I think we have some closed session items that our attorney is going to announce.
Yes, we will be discussing item 18 on our closed session list.
Where are we going to do closed session?
Upstairs.
Okay. I didn't say when. Is lunch here, Michael? It is. It'll. So we'll return at 1:45. We're going to allow for an hour and a half. Did you want to speak, sir? No, okay.